welcome to the KMXD Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Brian Venois. In this week's recap, we hear about Aleutian terns.
First time that one tried skybombing, I went face down to the ground.
That's coming up.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
But first, four candidates are running to be the next mayor of the city of Kodiak, and four others are running for the two city council seats. That's after the August 15 deadline for candidates to file to run for open seats in the upcoming municipal election. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports.
By the end of day on Friday, four candidates had added their name to the list for city mayor, the latest one being Mary Jean Silva. Silva is the co-founder of Kodiak Island Assisted Living and formerly the assistant director of the Coast Guard-based Kodiak's Child Development Center. Mark Anderson, Alan Seal, and Terry Haynes are also on the ballot for the two-year term as the city's mayor. Haynes is in the midst of his three-year term as city council member, and by city code, he cannot serve on the council and be mayor simultaneously. For transparency, Haynes is a staff member at KMXT Radio. He does not have any editorial influence over news stories, and he did not review the story before it was aired. There are also two council member seats up for grabs this year, with four candidates and neither of the incumbents running for election. Councilmember Charlie Davidson had previously submitted his paperwork to run for his seat, but decided to withdraw from the race on Friday. Davidson said in a statement that he made the decision for health reasons. The final candidates are Davidson's niece, Juna Davidson, Sandra West, Nick Mangini, and Jay Chelly. Registered voters who live within the city can choose two candidates for the council, and the top two vote-getters will win seats. In related news, five candidates are vying for two open seats on the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly. There's also a head-to-head challenge for borough mayor between two candidates who were already elected to the municipal government. After neither incumbent, Larry Ledoux or Jared Griffin, filed for the two seats on the Borough Assembly, five newcomers all submitted paperwork by Friday's deadline. Those candidates are Jeffrey Woods, a probation and corrections officer with the state of Alaska, Christina Van Hoogmode, or K-Van, a development staff member at KMXT Radio and former teacher with a local school district, Jeremiah Gardner, a local business owner at Kodiak's Bicycle Shop, 58 Degrees North, Caroline Roberts, who works for Kodiak Area Native Association and moved to the island about 3 years ago, and Rob Lindsay, a longtime fisherman and member of the Cook Inlet Regional Citizens Advisory Council. As for the borough mayor position, Assemblymember Jared Griffin filed as a challenger to incumbent Scott Arndt rather than run for re-election on the assembly. For transparency, Griffin is the general manager of KMXT Radio. He does not have any editorial influence over news stories, and he did not review the story before it was aired. Arndt has been borough mayor since May of 2023 and was on the assembly prior to that. Meanwhile, Jim Pryor is the only one running for the lone seat on the Kodiak Island Borough School District School Board this year. There are also nine total open seats spread across five service area boards. Four of them have candidates with no challengers, leaving the rest currently vacant. Election day for both the city and the borough is October 7th. Early voting begins on September 22nd. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
Alaska State Troopers killed a Kodiak brown bear in a neighborhood near Kodiak city limits. As KMXT has this report, officials say it was spotted several times in the area before they decided to put it down. Crystal Burnside says her son spotted a bear in their neighborhood just north of Kodiak on Sunday night. Monday morning, however, it was still around.
He thought he was going to come and look for tracks, see where the bear went, just kind of get an idea. And so he was poking around in the backyard back behind the shed, and he heard breathing.
The bear seemed to sleep in a berry patch about 25 feet from their back porch. Bear sightings are pretty common around Kodiak, usually a few minutes' drive from more developed areas. Once in a while, they're spotted around the forests in and around town, occasionally scavenging through trash cans and dumpsters. Burnside says they've lived in their house for about 20 years, but this is the first time they've seen a bear there. They called the Alaska State Troopers when it didn't move for a while.
Probably 5 minutes after we called the troopers, we're looking through the window. Like, we could see the salmon berry bushes rustling. And we just kind of watched, and we saw a bear pop its head up, kind of up between the trees.
Troopers arrived shortly after. They observed it for a few hours and took the shot from the roof of the family's shed. Tess Williams is a public information officer for the Alaska State Troopers.
So the bear had repeatedly gotten into roll carts and tipped over dumpsters throughout the month. There have been multiple reports about this.
Several people had posted in Kodiak community Facebook groups about spotting a bear in the same area the last several weeks. Williams says this was the likely culprit.
The bear hadn't been aggressive or, like, harmed anyone, but because it has become so comfortable around people, there was a concern for public safety going forward.
She says troopers, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and Kodiak police all tried to haze the bear or reduce attractants like unsecured trash to get it out of town unsuccessfully. Fish and Game could not be reached about the incident. Even while they were observing it, the Burnsides said several people were walking dogs or driving nearby, but despite all the sound, the bear didn't move. William says that was a sign it was likely too comfortable in the neighborhood.
It, at this point, was habituated to humans and was food conditioned and regularly seeking garbage and trash as its main food source.
While inspecting the bear's body, troopers found injuries from another gunshot wound in its rear leg that had impacted its organs. Troopers say some neighbors reported hearing a gunshot early that morning, but no one reported who shot it. William says killing animals like this is a last resort.
No one wants to have a situation end like that, but it is important to make sure that we are keeping the public safe and making sure that there aren't going to be situations that escalate once that bear is habituated to humans.
A few bears have been killed by wildlife officials in recent years, including one male in 2023, two males in 2022, and three bears in 2021, one of which was found with trash in its stomach. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Vanois. And Kodiak is home to the largest Coast Guard base in the country, but the island also hosts another military entity, the U.S. Navy. KMXT's Davis Hubby reports that construction work is currently underway at the Naval Special Warfare Center Detachment Kodiak.
The U.S. Navy first established a significant presence on Kodiak Island in 1939 during the World War II era. The Navy's main base became what is now Coast Guard Base Kodiak, and only remnants of its defense sites exist today. Still, the Navy maintains a facility for cold-weather maritime training on the island. One former Navy SEAL who did his training in Kodiak years ago, Chad Wright, said in a YouTube video that students training to be SEALs typically spend about a month going through cold-weather survival in the backcountry.
While we were up in Kodiak, we would go out on long-range patrols, missions, heavy, heavy land navigation in full gear. The packs we used, man, were just unbelievably heavy.
That also involved foraging for food in tide pools, building debris huts for shelter, and other cold-weather training. A few years ago, Governor Mike Dunleavy sent a letter to the then Secretary of the Navy encouraging him to expand operations for Navy SEAL training in Alaska. Although the facility on Spruce Cape is not expanding, the Navy is currently making improvements to its local infrastructure. A spokesperson for the Navy Region Northwest said via email that the agency is working on various military construction projects in the area. She said these infrastructure improvements involve renovations and upgrades to the facility's utilities and exterior, but do not expand the footprint. Roughly 10 years ago, the Naval Special Warfare Center Detachment Kodiak completed a 25,000 square foot expansion to accommodate growing participation in SEAL qualification training classes, according to reporting for the Kodiak Daily Mirror. It is unclear how long the current construction will go on for, but Natura Richardson with Island Trails Network told KMXT that the Navy's work will not impact the public trail or access at Spruce Cape. She also said that the Navy told her the cables running along the trail near the point of Spruce Cape will be removed once the project is done. In the coming years, the Navy plans to have an operations facility within Coast Guard Air Station Kodiak on the local Coast Guard base. Senator Lisa Murkowski requested $10,000 for the planning and design of this Navy facility from a Senate subcommittee on June 4th. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
And Alaska Marine Lines will no longer ship electric vehicles or plug-in hybrid vehicles to Alaska or Hawaii. The barge company announced the policy change in a statement in mid-August due to the fire risk associated with shipping large lithium-ion batteries. AML's decision to stop shipping electric vehicles means reduced access for communities off the road system across the state. Like in Kodiak, where EVs have become an increasingly popular option, Alaskans can still bring electric vehicles around by ferry, though it can take longer. The Alaska Marine Highway System limits its policy to 2 electric vehicles per sailing. Sam Dapsevich is a spokesperson for the Alaska Department of Transportation. He says once electric vehicles catch fire, they're challenging to put out.
TV fires, I believe, kind of burn until they go out. And so you have to kind of contain them. Each vessel has two specialized blankets on board that can be thrown over a vehicle, and it sort of smothers it. And we also have a policy to park those vehicles in a specific location on the ship, and we provide extra room around them for the possibility of needing to fight a fire.
In June, a cargo ship southwest of Adak caught fire in the open ocean. It was carrying over 3,000 vehicles, including nearly 700 hybrid vehicles and around 70 fully electric vehicles. All crew members were rescued, but the U.S. Coast Guard could do little to contain the blaze due to the risks associated with lithium-ion batteries. The ship burned for days before ultimately capsizing and sinking. Napsovich says it's not just the fire that makes EVs high risk, especially on a passenger vessel like a state ferry.
It's not just the fire that's dangerous. It's the toxic fumes, and you're in an enclosed space. Through the ventilation system in the vessel, they can travel into passenger spaces. And so it's just a very dangerous situation to have an EV fire on a boat, and that's part of why we limit it.
Dapsovich says Alaskans looking to bring up electric vehicles from the lower 48 should flag that information when they're making a ferry reservation. In an email to KCAW over in Sitka, Alaska Marine Line spokesperson Ryan Dixon said the barge company would continue to reassess its decision to stop shipping electric vehicles as industry safety standards improve. Hybrid vehicles that do not plug in will still be allowed on the company's cargo ships, as well as smaller electric recreational vehicles like e-bikes and four-wheelers. The new policy is effective immediately for Central and Western Alaska and Hawaii, but the change doesn't go into effect for Southeast until September 1st. And our last story for today, Aleutian tern population statewide crashed by over 90% in 2015. But now a few colonies on Kodiak are starting to rebound, thanks in part to ranching on the island. I joined a biologist to understand the relationship between crows and birds and have this report for KMXT. Dappled light fills a valley near the end of Kodiak's road system as dozens of Aleutian terns circle above. Some of them swoop at the group as we near their nests. Daniel Smith is the biologist for the Shunack tribe of Kodiak. It's not his first time getting dive bombed by the 4-ounce birds.
First time that one tribe dive bombed me, I went face down to the ground.
But it is the tribe's first summer studying Aleutian terns along Kodiak's road system. Biologists in 2015 found a more than 90% decline of the species statewide compared to populations in 1975. Smith says this Kodiak bird colony had a rough start to the summer too.
So at the start of the year, there was about 150 birds, and then it kind of dropped a little bit where some of them probably failed to nest right around mid to late June.
But later in the summer, Smith says many of them came back, and the area likely attracted others from around the archipelago. He says the summer has been a productive year for Aleutian terns in the Pisagshack area.
One of the reasons why I think that it's doing well is because this is the first year that the cattle have been rotated out of the field. In previous years, the cattle have not been moved out of the field, and the cattle do good things for the terns, but also bad things.
The good includes keeping grasses low. Smith says grazed areas are an ideal nesting habitat for Aleutian terns. The nests usually look like a small divot in grassy areas and easily blend in with the rest of the field. Grazed areas this year have attracted most of the island's tern populations, according to Smith. There's about 30 historical colonies around the archipelago, but biologists noticed most of them are moving to eroded areas like those by cow fields. But if cows stay in an area too long, that can cause problems for the birds, too.
Cows are great to keep that vegetation low, but when they're there, unfortunately, the cattle have been known to trample nests.
That's why biologists worked with the rancher in the area to move his animals to another area to graze. Smith says rotating has already been a huge benefit to helping the birds have better rearing grounds.
So this is the first year that they have been rotated, and we've already seen three fledglings from the first nest attempt, which started around late May, early June. Some of them had re-nested in late June, early July.
Another large active colony of this year, just a few miles away in Kelsen Bay, wasn't as lucky. Nearly all of the first round of eggs there were lost, partly because of both cow and human traffic. Smith says he's already working with Lesnoy, one of the local native corporations that manages the area.
Permanent fence is probably not going to be the best thing, for Lesnoy, since it is a heavily used area for camping and recreation, but we're working together to make a solution for that. to protect those birds.
By now, many of Kodiak's aleutian terns are already starting to migrate for the winter towards equatorial areas like Indonesia and the Philippines. Smith says he'll keep monitoring the colony for the next few weeks and resume when they migrate back to Kodiak next spring. Reporting from ranching fields near Passagshack, I'm Brian Venois.
The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center is committed to offering safe shelter and resources to victims and their children fleeing domestic violence and/or sexual assault, including the use of a 24-hour crisis line. KWRCC is open to individuals of any gender who need anonymous support from a trained advocate. The crisis line is available at 907-486-3625.
If you enjoy the podcast and want to support local news centered around the Kodiak Archipelago, make sure to donate to KMXT. Just go on our website at kmxt.org and click the donate button in the top right corner of the page. That's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm your host, Brian Venois. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.